Chapter 4 Coronet, Corellia. A bunker always felt like a bunker, Wedge reflected. No matter that this chamber was decorated for entertainment, with wall-mounted displays showing scenes from the city of Coronet and its surroundings in true-life colors, no matter that it was furnished with tables supplied with dinnerware suited to formal company and trays of refreshments, with elegantly curved handmade chairs and comfortable, immaculate sofas in the most eye-pleasing of styles. It was a bunker, deep beneath the ground, and the men and women who were gathered here, politicians of the world of Corellia, and the drones who worked for them, all sat a little hunched, as though they could feel the tons of masonry and dirt heaped protectively about their heads. Politicians of the other four occupied worlds of the Corellian system, represented by holograms, must have been in above-ground buildings, where they were. Their postures were not bent. Wedge also sat upright, both out of habit and to annoy the others, and accepted a cup of caff from one of the drones, this one a pale, slight young man in a Corsec uniform. Wedge waited until the drone had withdrawn, before turning back toward the other man on the couch.
So the conversation didn't accomplish much politically, except that I think Colonel Solo will advise in favor of the Galactic Alliance, giving us more time.
The man he addressed, Der Gedgen, the Five Worlds Prime Minister and Corellian Chief of State, handsome, younger than his political acuity might suggest, dark-skinned and dark-haired, set his own cup of caff on a nearby table and frowned.
"Giving us more time," he echoed. "That sounds a lot like a victor doing a favor to the vanquished."
"Obviously they're not victors here," Wedge said, "but just as obviously they're in the stronger position. A few more weeks or months of their blockade, and they'll starve our economy past the point of resistance. Solo was right when he said that we were alone. Unless your communications with the Bothans have had a sudden breakthrough you haven't mentioned."
"You sound defeated, Admiral."
The speaker was the hologram of a short, wide-shouldered man. The transmission of his seated form was superimposed onto a chair to Gedgen's right. The speaker had thinning hair and a face ideally suited to belligerence. His name was Sadris Koyan, and he was both Chief of State of the World of Trollis and a member of the Centerpoint Party, the minority force within the Corellian system's new coalition government. Wedge gave him a neutral look.
"Clearly we're not defeated. But if things continue as they are, we will be. I'm telling you that we can negotiate a non-surrender resolution to this situation, rejoin the Galactic Alliance, and experience minimal repercussions, if we negotiate in good faith, starting now."
He felt his mood darken, and knew his expression had to be doing so as well.
"Good faith may be tricky to come by, though, in a political body that uses its secret reserve fleet to execute a plan to assassinate a foreign head of state."
He was drowned out, shouted down by the voices of the others. Gedgen was saying,
"Now is not the time,"
while Koyan roared,
"Lack of competence in keeping our access to our own shipyards open."
Denjak Stepler, former Five Worlds Prime Minister, now Minister of Justice, grimaced and spoke inaudible words of calm and caution, motioning with both hands for the others to lower their voices. Rorf Willems, Minister of Defense, was grumbling,
"Bit more cooperation is called for here."
Minister of Intelligence Gavel Lamora seemed to be evaluating Wedge, as if measuring him for a coffin. The drones kept conspicuously quiet, while the ministers and chiefs of state raged. Gedgen scowled and spoke again, this time at a full-throated shout,
"Shut up!"
The others quieted and stared at the Corellian leader. Gedgen returned his attention to Wedge.
"Admiral,
Are you saying that with the assault fleet you could have kept the GA forces out of our system? Kept us from suffering the blockade the GA has instituted? Wedge nodded.
It's very likely.
Very likely. And you're also saying that our best course of action now is to negotiate for a no-fault return to the GA?
Yes.
Even though it would inevitably cost us control of Centerpoint Station. The station, home to an ancient gravitic device that could be used to construct entire solar systems, or destroy them, had been near operational when a Jedi mission had sabotaged it, costing the Corellians their most significant weapon. Ben Skywalker, son of Wedge's old friend Luke, had been the saboteur. Wedge's association with the Skywalkers was one that everyone present knew. Wedge nodded.
Chief Gedgen, that result is far superior to being starved into submission and then forced back into the GA under terms dictated by Cal Omis and Admiral Neothel.
So we can't win.
Not without wealthy, powerful planetary systems joining on our side.
Which we were within a centimeter of having, Quayen growled, until Jason Solo and his parents fouled up our action in the Hapes Consortium.
Wedge bit down on a response. Assassinating a good ruler such as Queen Mother Tenel Ka, so that a treacherous, deceptive, pro-Corellian one could take her place, might help win a war, but the peace that followed would be fragile, uncertain, even evil. However, saying such a thing before this body of men and women would do no good. Gedgen, seeming to read Wedge's reply in his expression, looked over at one of his aides.
"Bring Admiral Delpin in."
He returned his attention to Wedge.
"Admiral Antilles, we have a problem. And the problem is that I don't think you're willing to win at any cost."
"I'm not," Wedge said. "And neither are you."
"I am," Gedgen said.
"If winning meant the Corellian system was the only center of civilization to survive the war?"
Gedgen frowned.
"That's a ridiculous and extreme example."
"Exactly."
Wedge nodded.
"But I'll bet that it constitutes an example of a victory you wouldn't be willing to accept, meaning that you're not willing to win at any cost. We just have to establish for this ruling body what is the maximum consequence in victory that we're willing to accept."
Gedgen tried again, demonstrating a level of patience and even respect that Wedge found surprising.
"Admiral, you were kept out of the loop on the decision to, adjust tape and politics because it was clear to the rest of us, based on your history of performance, that you would never sign off on it in its final form."
"You might be right."
"But we're already in agreement that sacrificing the dictator of a distant government is well within the maximum consequence in victory that we're willing to bring about."
The door into the chamber hissed open, and a woman in the dress uniform of an admiral of the Corellian Defense Force, the same uniform Wedge wore, entered. She was Wedge's height and was muscular of build, the sort of woman whose hobby time was probably all spent in a gymnasium. Her hair, cut close, was black and picked up blue glints from the glow rods around the room. She was about half Wedge's age and good-looking. There was no trace of makeup evident on her features. There was, however, a trace of sympathy on them as she glanced at Wedge. She came to a stop in front of Gedgen's chair, her cap tucked military style beneath her left arm.
"Admiral Jenna Delpin, reporting as ordered."
Wedge knew her. She was a fast-rising star in the Corellian Armed Forces, and had led the assault fleet in the disastrous coup attempt at the Hapes Consortium. Its defeat had reflected not on her ability, but on factors well outside her control, such as the interference of the Jedi and unexpected armed forces. Gedgen acknowledged her with a nod, then turned again to Wedge. "Admiral, what you accomplished in the liberation of Tralis makes it clear that we couldn't have chosen a better leader for our united armed forces. But times change, and your personal code of conduct is, I believe, going to become a greater impediment in dealing with your government's needs. Admiral Delpin has a clearer understanding of her role and her duties to the government, and has your skill at moving and motivating subordinates. For this reason, and understand it's nothing personal, we continue to hold you in the highest regard, I'm removing you from the position of Supreme Commander of Corellia's armed forces." He turned his attention to the newcomer. "Admiral Delpin, I'm appointing you to that position."
"Thank you, sir. I accept."
Her voice was smooth, controlled. Wedge stood. He did it slowly and carefully, the better to mask what he was feeling. Regardless of how inevitable this moment might have been, regardless of how inflexibly he might hold on to the ethics that had made it happen, being relieved of command still felt like taking a sledgehammer blow to the gut, and he didn't want anyone in this group to see how he felt. Smoothly, he saluted.
"Congratulations, Admiral."
She returned his salute.
"Thank you, Admiral. After this meeting breaks up, perhaps we could have a cup of caff and discuss things."
Wedge limited his reaction to a faint smile. He knew what that conversation would consist of.
"I'm sorry this had to happen. I hope there won't be any uneasiness between us. We need you."
No, they didn't. But that realization, and what he had to do next, caused Wedge's stomach to turn even further. Gedgen said,
"Admiral Antilles, your tactical and strategic planning abilities continue to make you invaluable to our armed forces. If Admiral Delpin agrees, I want you to join her operations staff."
Delpin gave Gedgen a crisp nod.
"I do agree."
Wedge took a deep breath.
"I'm sorry. I can't. Admiral, ordinarily I would have no hesitation in accepting, and in working with you and for you. But circumstances are not ordinary."
He fixed Gedgen with a stare.
"Sir, I hereby resign my commission in the Corellian Defense Force."
The room fell silent. A moment later, someone behind Wedge said,
"Good."
Gedgen shot an angry look at the speaker, then addressed Wedge.
"I won't accept."
Wedge shrugged.
"You have no choice. Or rather, your choice is to keep me on as non-commissioned personnel, or offer me a full discharge. From this point on, or at least from the point I submit my resignation along official lines, I am no longer a commissioned officer."
Gedgen heaved a sigh and thought for a moment.
"You can either stay on as a sergeant,
a speeder pilot for our landing forces,
or you can make one last public appearance as Admiral Antilles, cheerfully handing off your post and duties to Admiral Delpin, and honorably retire."
Wedge considered it. The public appearance would help convince the majority of the populace that everything was fine with their leadership, that he had every faith in the new Supreme Commander, that he supported the new regime and all its ways. Which was a lie. But if he didn't do it, members of the armed forces might lose a little faith in their leadership, and that could result in breakdowns in authority, in the deaths of good soldiers. Wedge's entire deliberation took a quarter second.
I'll make the appearance.
Of course.
Of course, Gedgen echoed. Dismissed.
Wedge saluted, and, a little stiff-legged, made his way from the room. His posture was perfect for the long walk through the doors, down the long corridor beyond, past a guard station, and into the turbo lift that would carry him up to ground level. But once the lift doors closed behind him, he sagged against the wall. His legs felt like rubber, and his stomach rebelled like a ground pounder's upon its first experience with zero gravity. From admiral in charge of an entire planetary system's armed forces to civilian in two easy steps, he thought, and managed a slightly nauseated smile. And once again, he might just have signed his own death warrant. A government that was willing to assassinate foreign rulers wouldn't hesitate at ridding itself of someone who could be a potent symbol used against them, and who had just proven that he wasn't with them. The instant he finished his public appearance with Admiral Delpin, the chrono would begin ticking down on his life. The thought, so familiar after a lifetime of warfare, settled his stomach and beat back the nausea he'd felt from the moment he knew he was to be relieved of command. By the time the lift doors opened, he was standing tall again. He walked past the ground-floor security station and flashed its guards a smile, suggesting that he was a rancor, and they were made of meat. Gindine System, Tendrando Refueling and Repair Station. The vehicle lining up for an approach on the refueling station's spinward docking bay had once been a Corellian YT-1300 transport, efficiently disc-shaped, with aggressive-looking forward mandibles and a cockpit that protruded from the starboard side of the bow to give the craft an oddly pleasing asymmetrical profile. Now, however, countless burns of battle damage darkened the hull, and the top and bottom turrets, which had once housed laser cannons, were just gone. As the craft made her last bank before the approach, the man waiting in the docking bay could see that the topside turret had not been replaced or even covered over. Where it had once been installed, there was a hole that gaped into the vehicle's interior. The waiting man would have recognized the Millennium Falcon instantly, even if he hadn't known she would be coming to this place. He had once owned her. He still loved her, and now he winced to see what had become of her. Still urbane and handsome, and now distinguished-looking with age, Lando Calrissian stood in complete contrast with the famous transport. He was dressed in a silken ensemble that would have cost what it took to buy a good speeder, but whose components were all chosen for unobtrusive elegance. The dark blue tunic, black trousers, and purple hip cloak were subdued of color and fashion. The silver-tipped black cane he carried was his one outward concession to age. He watched as the Falcon slowly approached. As frail as she looked, he half expected her to bounce off the atmospheric shields that kept the vacuum of space at bay. But she floated gently in through that negligible barrier. Now that the transport was within atmosphere, Lando could hear a rhythmic clanking from within her hull, something gone awry within her engine housings. The Falcon slid gently forward on her repulsor lifts and settled down to a remarkably smooth landing. Lando walked around from beneath the mandibles to look through the cockpit viewport, but the occupants had already left, so he continued around to the boarding ramp. He had a handful of jokes in mind for the arrival of Han and Leia.
"I've seen transports crashed into the sides of world devastators that looked better. What have you done to the old girl this time? Did you buy your pilot's license at the drunken Minox School of Instruction?"
But then, as the pair descended the boarding ramp, he caught sight of their faces. There was not one iota of good humor cheer, even hope, in their expressions. Just grimness, and under the surface, pain. Han wore his customary pants, tunic, and vest, and had his left arm in a sling. Leia was in brown Jedi robes. Both sets of clothes looked wrinkled and slept in. Lando cleared his throat to gain a moment to think and clear away the good-natured, mocking vocal mannerism he had intended to employ. Then he said, "I'm glad to see you. I have calf and food in the lounge." While Han and Leia ate, slowly, barely tasting their food, they told Lando what had happened. Jason was the central figure in almost every element of the story. Jason supporting laws to concentrate and imprison Corellians on Coruscant. Jason interrogating a prisoner until she died, the daughter of Boba Fett. Jason believing that Han and Leia would conspire against Tenel Ka, and punitively firing on the Falcon. When his own parents, sister, and cousin were aboard. Cockmame and Meewal, Leia's Nogri bodyguards, killed in that attack. Not just killed, but incinerated, instantly obliterated, so that there was nothing left to bury. As their account of the events ran down, Lando shook his head, almost unwilling to believe what he was hearing. "I'm sorry. I've been up on the holonews. I knew about his promotion to head of the Galactic Alliance Guard. But all this... I don't know what to say." Finally, Han looked up from his plate. "Can you help us fix the Falcon?" Lando nodded. "Consider it done. This place is an old repair station we picked up in a corporate merger. It's not cost-efficient, so we've transferred most of the personnel to other locations and are going to be closing it down. I'll keep this repair dock open long enough to make the Falcon ship-shape. Better than new." He winced again. "It'll take some time, though." Han and Leia exchanged a look, and Leia said, "We'll need a fast transport for the interim, too. Something that can get us through the Corellian exclusion zone if we need to. And something that doesn't scream, 'The Solos are back,' whenever it's noticed."
"I've got you covered."
They were silent for several moments. Then Leia asked, "And how are you doing, Lando?"
"I don't want to tell you."
That got the attention of both Han and Leia.
"Why?"
Han asked.
"Because it's all good."
Leia managed a little smile. "I appreciate you not wanting to make us feel worse by gloating. We know that's not what you're going to do. We could use some good news. Really."
"Oh. Well, then?"
Lando heaved a sigh.
"I'd have to say that all my wishes from when I was a young man have pretty much come true. I'm rich, I can travel wherever I want and do whatever I want. I'm married to a smart, beautiful woman who doesn't worry about where I am every second of the year. I can visit a gambling den and lose a fortune and not catch any heat. Tendra knows that at some point I'll win another fortune, or a patent, or a planet, and make up the loss. Tendrando Arms isn't as big as it was during and right after the Yuuzhan Vong War, but it's doing very well selling to security forces in the private sector, and we've diversified. We're very healthy."
Leia frowned. "You almost sound sad." Lando paused, groping for the right words.
"No. But there's no risk in my life. The years aren't going to make me old, but sitting around being successful, popular, and responsible is."
He scowled.
Do you know how long it's been since a bounty hunter came after me?
Leia offered him a wan smile. For us, not so long.
Lando heaved himself to his feet.
I'm going to show you to your quarters. You get some rest. I'll arrange for a suitable transport to be brought up here.
Corellian Exclusion Zone. Anakin Solo. Jason sat cross-legged in his cabin, floating a meter above the floor, tranquil. For once, he was fully open to the Force, letting it flow through him, sustain him, support him in the air. He let the Force do as it wished, showing him pictures, flicking little traces of thought and emotion through him. And all the while he searched, peering as if the entirety of the Force were an ocean, and he wanted to find one distant, familiar face among its waves and currents. He found it. Very far away, tiny in the distance, but demonstrably still alive. Lumia. And suddenly she was nearer, much nearer. She appeared in his physical vision as well, no more than 2 meters before him. She looked as though she were a two-dimensional being who had been at right angles to his line of sight, then suddenly rolled over and into plain view. As she had in years past, she wore a dark pants and tunic ensemble, and on her head she wore a wrapped headdress. One portion of it concealed her nose and mouth, ending in a sharp point oriented down toward her chest, and 2 other portions radiated from her forehead as if concealing a Deveronian's horns, giving her head an oddly triangular cast. She lay on her side as if resting on a couch. There was no couch to be seen. She floated in the air as Jason did. Her head was lifted, and her eyes were unfocused. They took a moment to orient on him.
Jason?
Her voice was distant, echoing as though she were in a large room with hard walls. For a moment he was nonplussed. He'd known about her ability to project realistic Force phantoms from her home, an asteroid suffused with concentrated Force energy. But he hadn't imagined her using the technique for simple communication. He envied her the technique. Perhaps she would someday show him how she did it.
Lumia, he said, I'm happy to know that you've survived.
Thank you.
She laid her head down again, as if on a pillow. Her movements suggested exhaustion, even pain.
I am healing. Here I can summon my strength. Your uncle hurt me.
Yet you don't sound angry.
She laughed. The noise was faint.
I'm used to it. Whenever we meet, I expect him to hurt me. He will probably do so until I die, or until you and I have won, and he is forced to understand us.
I'm in a holding pattern for the moment, Lumia, waiting for negotiations with the Corellians to bear fruit, thinking about where my studies need to lead me.
Ah.
She was silent a long moment. Jason watched her breathe. It seemed to be an effort for her.
You have been considering your sacrifice. Sacrificing what you love. Loving what you sacrifice.
Yes. I am becoming more ready.
Good. And have you been looking for an apprentice?
Ben is my apprentice. Though I realized not long ago that I can sacrifice him if I have to.
Ben is your Jedi apprentice, not your Sith apprentice.
I'm not a full Sith yet, and therefore cannot have a Sith apprentice. Her sigh sounded exasperated.
You're stalling. You don't know whether he will be fit to become a Sith apprentice. The time to learn that is now, not when you reveal yourself. You must test him.
He's back with his parents, and they don't want him to see me.
Lumia lay there, silent, unhelpful. She watched him and waited.
So, he considered, I must separate Ben from Luke and Mara and test him.
Lumia nodded.
If you wish, I will coordinate the test. But you must decide what it will be.
All right.
And you must decide what to do with him if he fails.
Yes.
If he fails, will you love him less?
Jason paused over his answer. He had to look deep into his own feelings to imagine how he would feel about Ben if the boy failed.
I think, initially, it would make little difference. But we would soon grow apart.
So if he fails, he will not long be suitable as your sacrifice. Keep that in mind.
I will.
Lumia rolled over again, away from him, and was gone.